Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, recording in our studio at the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon, and wishing all of you a happy Labor Day. Today on our Jobs Talk segment, we're going to be telling you about an important bill just in time for Labor Day to protect temporary workers from dangerous conditions. Plus, we'll have President Barack Obama's Labor Day address on improvements in the employment situation nationally and some issues impacting America's workforce. But first, we have some major news about key victories in Iraq, as well as in Sacramento, and how efforts of local people right here in East County are leading to major actions by lawmakers and world leaders to help Iraq's persecuted minorities. Our newsmaker interview for today is with Renee Altson, leader of an Amnesty International chapter in East County, on their efforts to help with humanitarian causes around the world, and a hands-up, don't-shoot rally this Tuesday at San Diego State over the shooting of an unarmed teen by police in Missouri. We'll have an update on the officers involved in the beating of a trolley passenger in La Mesa, and a story on the anniversary of the extinction of the passenger pigeon, as well as the future of the Endangered Species Act in Congress. Find out about some important items on our county supervisor's agenda this week impacting East County and San Diego. Plus, hear why residents in Descanso are asking regulators to take action against SDG&E over low-flying helicopter flights, including one that injured a horse. Hear about a new movement for transportation justice to improve public health and safety in East County, and a meeting coming up to get your ideas on transportation for our region. Learn about a ban on plastic bags approved by the legislature. And on Tribal Beat, hear about a very exciting archaeological discovery in Hakumba Hot Springs. Plus, hear about some fun autumn activities for you and your family in East County, all on today's East County Magazine radio show. This is Miriam Raftery with an update on the situation in Iraq and how a local grassroots effort to win support for helping Iraq's persecuted minorities is being heard in Washington, D.C., in our state capital in Sacramento, and in nations around the world. A growing international coalition is now supporting efforts to battle the terrorist group known as ISIL or ISIS. Secretary of State John Kerry has called the group a cancer that must be destroyed as it imposes a radical Islamic caliphate across the Middle East and has lodged threats to launch jihadist attacks against the U.S. and other Western nations. In a press conference, Pentagon spokesman John Kirby offered this update late last week.
A couple of weeks ago, Secretary Hagel commissioned a U.S.-led working group, a task force, to accelerate resupply efforts. In addition to support from the United States and the central government of Iraq in Baghdad, Secretary Hagel will announce today that seven additional nations, Albania, Canada, Croatia, Denmark, Italy, France, and the United Kingdom, have committed to helping provide Kurdish forces urgently needed arms and equipment. Operations have already begun and will accelerate in the coming days, with more nations also expected to contribute. The Secretary is grateful to each of these allies for working alongside the United States military. This multinational effort, which is being coordinated with the government of Iraq in Baghdad, will greatly assist Kurdish forces in repelling the brutal terrorist threat that they face from ISIL. And as Secretary Hagel has made clear, the determination of the Iraqi people and the international community to counter this threat is only going to grow. And the United States looks forward to working with our friends from around the world to assist in that effort.
One of the most imperiled cities in Iraq has been Amerli, where people have been trapped without adequate food, water, medical supplies, and power. Last week, Al Jazeera reported that the situation was so desperate there that some Amerli residents said if ISIS succeeded in taking their town, the men of Amerli would kill their own wives and daughters to prevent them from being taken by ISIS, which has been raping, torturing, killing, and selling women and girls into slavery. Over the weekend, however, CNN reported some good news for the 20,000 beleaguered residents of Amerli. The U.S. carried out airstrikes on ISIS forces surrounding Amerli, and along with Australia, France, and the United Kingdom, also dropped humanitarian aid to protect Shiite Turkmen, an ethnic minority that the United Nations warned had faced an imminent threat of massacre in Amerli. Thanks to the U.S.-led airstrikes, Iraqi security and volunteer forces have now broken the siege of Amerli and entered the town, retired General Khaled al-Amerli told CNN on Sunday. Iraqi state TV has also confirmed the siege is broken. General Amerley hailed the occasion as a day of victory for Iraq and the resilient people of Amerley. The situation there is similar to the plight of the Yazidis, another ethnic minority that had been trapped on a mountaintop by ISIS forces until Kurdish and Iraqis freed many of them with help from U.S. airstrikes and humanitarian aid drops. American airstrikes also helped wrest control of a dam near the city of Mosul, away from ISIS, easing fears that the terrorists might blow up the dam to intentionally flood Mosul and other communities in the path. The president has now asked his military advisors to propose strategies for dealing with ISIS at its roots in Syria. Several East County and San Diego elected officials are now speaking out on the Iraq crisis. San Diego's Democratic Congresswoman Susan Davis, in a newsletter to constituents, which includes many here in East County, states, "While the violence in Iraq and Syria is a tragedy for everyone in the region, I am particularly concerned with the plight of religious minority communities in those two countries. That is why I co-sponsored a resolution introduced by Congressman Juan Vargas that reaffirms the commitment of the House of Representatives to promoting and protecting religious freedom around the world and providing relief to minority groups facing persecution." That measure passed the House unanimously in Washington, D.C. The latest news is that East County's Republican State Senator Joel Anderson has announced that the Assembly leadership allowed a vote on Senate Joint Resolution 17, which he authored, in response to requests from his constituents right here in East County. Here's what the senator had to say.
Mr. President, senators, I rise in support of SJR 17. The Islamic State of Iraq in Syria, also known as ISIS, has been on a rampage in the Middle East. We've seen over the last few weeks, whether it was in the Huffington Post or the Associated Press, that ISIS has buried people alive, hundreds of people alive. They've trafficked countless women into slavery and pillaged and raped villages. We know that there's a genocide occurring as we speak. They've recently said that you can either convert to their form of Islam or you can taste the sword. We're at a crossroads and people are looking at us to be the beacon for the world. And right now in Congress is H.R. 663 that would increase the refugees quota cap that would allow many of those people who are being persecuted to come here. I think we should be doing everything we can to help these innocent folks. You know, whether they're Christian, whether they're Muslim, it doesn't matter. Unless you're their particular brand of Sunni, you are a target of the sword if you don't convert. I ask that we unite today in support of this important resolution. I urge an aye vote. I thank you all for your support in advance. Juan Vargas is working very hard in Congress on this issue. This resolution is in support of his work. And I also want to point out that this is not limited solely to Christians, although there are between 400,000 and 850,000 Chaldeans who have been the target. There are two-thirds of the folks, one-fifth of them are Assyrian, but this is not just limited to that. If you're not that specific Sunni sect, you are a target of their sword, whether it's crucifixions, whether it's beheadings, or whether it's being buried alive. We have to reach out to these people. We have to offer them a safe harbor. Nobody should be persecuted and put to death because of their religious beliefs. It's never been right in the history of man, and it's not right today. I urge an aye vote.
Ayes 33, noes 0. Resolution is adopted.
After the unanimous passage of his resolution, Senator Anderson thanked his constituents across East County and San Diego for raising their voices in support to persuade the leadership to allow a vote on this important measure. He said, "When a community is united in a grassroots effort, great things can get accomplished."
This is Leon Thompson with the Crime Beat Report on East County Magazine. Two security officers caught on video beating a passenger on a trolley in La Mesa on August 18th have lost their jobs, Transit System Securities has informed Metropolitan Transit System. The MTS contracts with TSS to provide security services on trolleys and buses countywide. MTS Chief Executive Officer Paul Jablonski said, "This incident never should have happened, and we will take all appropriate steps internally and with TSS to help prevent future occurrences. We do not tolerate that kind of behavior." To help prevent future incidents of similar nature, MTS and TSS will be reviewing and revising policies, procedures, and training as necessary. In addition, supervisors will review security officers' performances in the field and correct as needed on a daily basis, a press statement from MTS indicates, adding that MTS has zero tolerance for improper use of force by all MTS employees and subcontractors. 10 News aired video showing a 7-minute beating caught on camera by a passenger. The victim, Philippe Vidoy, has said that he was beaten for rolling a cigarette before boarding the trolley in La Mesa. MTS turned video and details over to La Mesa police to determine if criminal charges are warranted. Names of the officers involved in the beating have been withheld pending outcome of the criminal investigation, MTS indicated. An East County Magazine investigation found that MTS has faced allegations of excessive force at least 3 other times recently, including 2 cases in which racial profiling was alleged.
Welcome to East County Magazine Show's Jobs Talk, bringing you news about great jobs, job training opportunities, and growing our regional economy. Just in time for Labor Day, a bill to protect temporary workers, Assembly Bill 1897, has passed the legislature and is now on the governor's desk. Increasingly, companies are relying on long-term use of temporary workers for more and more jobs, many of them strenuous and dangerous, and some workers have even reportedly been cheated out of wages. A report by ProPublica found that in California, temporary workers face a 50% higher risk of being injured on the job than permanent employees. Subcontracted workers have no guarantee of future work, and they risk punishment for speaking out or reporting hazardous conditions, problems this measure aims to correct. AB 1897 has support of labor groups, but opposition from large employers. Art Pulaski, Executive Secretary-Treasurer of the California Labor Federation, applauds passage of the bill to protect vulnerable temporary and subcontracted workers from exploitation by large corporations, and he urges the governor to sign it. He says, "By holding corporations that use fly-by-night subcontractors and staffing agencies accountable for mistreatment of workers, AB 1897 addresses a growing problem in our economy that's undermining the middle class and fueling a growing gap between the wealthy few and everyone else." The labor leader cites workers' stories of abuses by large corporations such as Walmart that he says have taken advantage of the subcontracting model by shielding their businesses from responsibility to the very workers that make the businesses run. AB 1897 was opposed by a coalition of business interests, including the California Chamber of Commerce. Opponents argued that the measure forces one company to essentially ensure the wage and hour obligation, workers' compensation coverage, occupational health and safety duties of a separate employer's employees. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center here in El Cajon. Human rights have been all over the news lately, everywhere from Ferguson, Missouri to Iraq and Gaza. And my very special guest today, who I'm honored to have on the show, is Renee Altson. Renee is a local representative of Amnesty International, a chapter that started right here in El Cajon and now meets in Santee. And they have been busy standing up for human rights across the globe, really. Renee, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Can you start by telling us a little bit about how Amnesty International got started and what the mission is?
Sure. Amnesty International was started in 1961 by a gentleman named Peter Benson. And we are a global movement of individuals and groups who are interested in protecting justice and human rights around the world.
Very good. Now, lately, one of the issues that you've been involved in has been the Ferguson, Missouri shooting of an unarmed teenager. Tell us what your group here in East County has been doing about that.
We sent a letter to the high officials in that town and also in the state, asking just for an investigation into the police and requesting more scrutiny about what really happened.
Now, I understand that the local chapter of Amnesty International is hosting a Hands Up, Don't Shoot rally about the Ferguson situation, and that's coming up when and where?
Yeah, we're doing the protest on September 2nd at 5:30 p.m., and it's going to be at San Diego State. It'll be in Mozilla Aztec Student Union in San Diego.
So it'll be at the Aztec Student Union at San Diego State.
Yes.
Now, San Diego State, until recently, had an Amnesty International chapter of its own. I understand that it dissolved as the seniors graduated who were running it and moved on. Are you looking for new students to take that over?
Absolutely. It was very, very progressive and very well organized last year. And then all the seniors left. And unfortunately, there were no people to step up. And so that chapter has closed. But there's definite desire to open it again.
Who should people contact if they're interested in that?
It's philosophy professor Mark Wheeler.
Okay, very good.
So he's in our local group. Mm-hmm. And he's also was kind of the teacher, liaison for the San Diego State group.
So as you've explained this to me, what your local chapter does is you choose several issues each week and you all sit down and you write, not emails, but old-fashioned handwritten letters that you mail to these leaders of countries around the world, police departments, whatever it might be. And this is part of a global effort, so it's actually not just you, but people around the world. So does it have much impact if they start getting boxes of mail coming into these offices?
Well, it's interesting because email is so common now, and most people use email. But research has shown that when these people receive actual physical letters, it just mounts up enough on their desk that they at some point have to acknowledge it in some way. So it's very much more effective to actually write on pen and paper. And I'm a slave driver. We're all tired at the end of the night because I try to do 5 action items every month. And that's quite a lot.
Yeah, that's a very impressive record. Now, you've had some victories, or Amnesty International at least has certainly had a voice in some examples of freeing people who were wrongly or unjustly imprisoned. For example, you were telling me about an Indonesian woman who had been gang raped and beaten, and what were the details of what she was facing?
She was arrested for adultery.
Adultery. So they considered it adultery even though she was gang raped.
Yes. And she was a Christian, which was also an issue. And so they arrested her, and they were going to beat her with stones. But, you know, there was going to be an official, like,
stoning.
Kill her with, yes,
wow.
A stoning. And there were letters from all over the world. We mostly write to officials, like people in higher up government who can actually do something and connect with what's going on, you know, in other areas. And so I think we wrote two different actions, like two different hot times on behalf of the woman.
Who actually, I believe, gave birth to a son while she was in prison.
She did. Yeah. She did, and she's out of prison now. So.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful. That was a fabulous victory. Now, I understand another case you've gotten involved in involved 5 journalists who were imprisoned in Myanmar, formerly Burma, simply for publishing a news story. So much for freedom of the press in Myanmar. What's happened there?
Yeah, they were jailed just for freedom of expression. That's all. And they were picked up, and there were 5 of them, or still are 5 of them. They were taken to prison. They were denied a lawyer at first. They're threatening them now, telling them that they will give them a longer prison sentence if they continue to ask for lawyers.
Wow.
So it's a big deal. And it was purely freedom of speech.
This is an active, ongoing case where people can get involved if they choose. Now, some of the other issues have included torture, gay rights, women's rights.
We are talking women's rights to not have to wear the veil, mm-hmm. or women's rights to drive a car.
Or not be stoned to death.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. I mean, very, very basic, just human rights.
Yeah. The veil issue was interesting. That centered around the Saudi women who are prohibited from driving cars in Saudi Arabia. So there was an interesting global protest about that. Tell us some details.
Yes. There were women all over the world who took pictures wearing their veil and sitting in the driver's seat of their car.
To show that it's okay for faithful Muslim women to drive cars.
To drive cars. And it was hundreds of photos from everywhere. And it was such a great campaign that got people talking about just basic women rights.
Yeah. People have also been involved in death penalty issues and some other things. Amnesty International is certainly a well-known and respected global organization. On gay rights, now there you've been involved. We're not talking gay marriage or some of the things that have been controversial in America. We're talking about countries in Africa, for example, Uganda, where they have criminalized being gay. They're actually putting people in prison for life for being gay. They were even talking about, at one point, imposing the death penalties. You've been involved, for example, in trying to change policies or free people who've been imprisoned for being gay in Africa?
Yes. A lot of our main goals are to help certain individuals who have been jailed unfairly, mm-hmm. and we're trying to get them out of jail. There's a peace community in Sudan. They were all arrested for being a peaceful community.
So standing up for the rights of people to protest
at people peacefully. Everywhere, mm-hmm. yes.
That's very important. Yeah. That's very important. That's certainly one of the issues, again, circling back to Ferguson, where it wasn't only the tragic death of this young man at the hands of the police, but it was how the police reacted to the protests with this militarization of the police and shutting down the protests and using tear gas. And certainly there was some issues on both sides, but then shutting the media out so they couldn't report on what was going
right.
on. Standing up for media rights is another thing.
Yes, also. And that Ferguson case was also, we wrote to the individuals above the police and asked them to really investigate what had happened. We did not write the police ourselves. We do not write people directly, except for at Christmas when we send letters and cards to the actual prisoners themselves, which is awesome thing.
And when we say prisoners, we're talking primarily prisoners of conscience, people who've been jailed for speaking out, for standing up for their beliefs.
Standing in the wrong place.
Right, not criminals, typically. You've had some very famous international names get involved in Amnesty International, some celebrities. Give us some examples.
It's amazing. Because we were started in 61, we had people way back then, and we in the past 10 years or so, we've had Sting.
Bono?
Mm-hmm. He's very passionate about a lot of things.
Yeah. One of the great voices for Amnesty International who was lost just recently was Robin Williams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he did a recording. He made a video for Amnesty International.
You can Google and still see the Robin Williams Amnesty International video on YouTube, I believe.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. You've also been involved in fighting the death penalty, some international things, Gaza. I know you've told me that you wrote letters on both sides. And I assume, by the way, that if people support generally the humanitarian goals of Amnesty International, can they pick and choose if they want to write letters on some causes, but not others?
And there's online versions of letters, and then there's actual brick and mortar, pen and ink. A lot of people do just online actions, and it seems to be just enough. They don't need to go to a meeting, but.
Yeah, so you can participate at different levels.
Mm-hmm.
So where do they get information about the East County chapter, the El Cajon chapter of Amnesty International that meets in Santee?
Yes, we meet on the last Monday of every month.
And where are the meetings?
Are at Summit Unitarian Universalist Church.
So those meetings are held at Summit Unitarian Universalist Fellowship Church, which is at 8778 Cottonwood Avenue in Santee. What time are the meetings?
We meet at 6:30.
6:30.
And it's usually till 8:30 or 9, and we have a great time. We always are able to talk about the issues of the day, and just there's so much pride in being a part of an organization that you can go home at the end of the day and say, I did something tangible about human rights today.
So important. Now, you also have a Facebook page where people could learn more about the issues for your chapter 672. What is the Facebook page?
The Facebook page is facebook.com/AIUSA672. You can also go, there's an international website, which is just amnesty.org. There's a USA-specific website, which is AIUSA.org.
Good point. So if someone's listening online, we do also podcast these, and you're not in San Diego's East County, that's how you can find out and get involved to help save lives in some cases.
I really cannot express to you the feeling of knowing that someone you wrote on behalf of has been freed. It is a feeling, there's nothing like that.
Well, you told me an interesting story about what drew you personally to Amnesty International. I think let's close by having you tell our listeners what moved you to join and become a leader in Amnesty International.
Well, it's a really interesting story. I actually saw the logo one day and fell in love with it.
Which is a candle surrounded by barbed wire.
Yes, and it's very simple. And I felt like a candle surrounded by barbed wire in my own life. And I just was drawn to the power of that image. And then...
So you were a survivor of abuse.
Yes, I am. Yeah. My own political prisoner of conscience, I suppose. And it just... There was so much hope in that image that you could have the light and the barbed wire and they could coexist.
Yeah. Well, it's a very commendable thing to take what must be very painful memories for yourself and turn that into something good to try and help others, to help really all of humanity.
Yes, I definitely think being a survivor helps that, because I can relate to a lot of the issues or in the emotions that people are having as they go through these ridiculous accusations and imprisonments.
Yeah. Well, Renee, I want to thank you very, very much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. This Labor Day weekend, we bring you President Barack Obama's Labor Day address.
Hi, everybody. Whether you're firing up the grill, fired up for some college football, or filling up the car for one last summer road trip, happy Labor Day weekend. We set aside Labor Day to honor the working men and women of America. And this Labor Day, we've got more to celebrate. Over the past 53 months, our businesses have added nearly 10 million new jobs. Last month, for the first time since 1997, we created more than 200,000 jobs for six straight months. And for the first time in over a decade, business leaders worldwide have declared, 2 years running, that the number one place to invest isn't China, it's America. So there are reasons to be optimistic about where we're headed. And the decisions we make now will determine whether or not we accelerate this progress, whether economic gains flow to a few at the top, or whether a growing economy fuels rising incomes and a thriving middle class. Think about it this Labor Day. The things we often take for granted, like Social Security and Medicare, workplace safety laws, and the right to organize for better pay and benefits, even weekends, we didn't always have these things. Workers and the unions who get their back had to fight for them. And those fights built a stronger middle class. To build a stronger middle class in today's changing economy, we've got to keep fighting. We've got to fight for the right to affordable health insurance for everybody, the right to fair pay, family leave, and workplace flexibility, the right to a fair living wage. Let me focus on that last one for a minute. In America, no one who works full-time should ever have to raise a family in poverty. A hard day's work deserves a fair day's pay, and raising the minimum wage would be one of the best ways to give a boost to working families. It would help around 28 million Americans from all walks of life pay the bills, provide for their kids, and spend that money at local businesses. And that grows the economy for everybody. The bottom line is, America deserves a raise. But until we've got a Congress that cares about raising working folks' wages, it's up to the rest of us to make it happen. And in the year and a half since I first asked Congress to raise the minimum wage, Americans of all walks of life are doing just that. 13 states and D.C. have done their part by raising their minimum wages. 4 more states have minimum wage initiatives on the ballot this November. And the states where the minimum wage has gone up this year have experienced higher job growth than the states that haven't. Business leaders at companies like The Gap are doing their part. They're raising base wages for tens of thousands of workers because they know it's good for business. Mayors across the country are doing their part. Mayor Emanuel in Chicago and Mayor Garcetti in L.A. are working to lift their city's wages over time to at least $13 an hour. I've tried to do my part by requiring companies that get contracts with the federal government to pay their workers a fair wage of $10.10 an hour. And earlier this month, the president of Kentucky State University set a great example by giving himself a $90,000 pay cut so that he could give raises to his lowest paid employees. His sacrifice will give more of his workers and their families a little extra money to help make ends meet. That's how America built the greatest middle class the world's ever known. Not by making sure a fortunate few at the top are doing well, but by making sure that everyone who's willing to work hard and play by the rules can get ahead. That's the bedrock this country is built on. Hard work, responsibility, sacrifice, and looking out for one another as one united American family. So let's keep that in mind this Labor Day, and every day. Have a great weekend, everybody.
This is Miriam Raftery with this week's Local Government Report. San Diego supervisors meet on Tuesday and Wednesday this week with many important items on the agendas that impact East County and our region overall. On Tuesday, supervisors will consider adopting an ordinance to raise fees on the families of juveniles who are wards of the court and on probationers to recover the county's full costs, up to the maximum allowed by state law. Supervisors on Tuesday will also consider sale of surplus property on Highway 78 in Ramona. On Wednesday, the supervisors will hear planners' recommendations for developing an agricultural promotion program for activities ranging from cheesemaking to honey production. The proposal includes updates to the tiered winery ordinance. It also includes allowing some lands currently zoned for grape growing to also be used for winemaking. Wednesday's agenda also includes options to amend the county building code to support energy efficiencies and green building technology. Plus, supervisors will consider purchase of agricultural conservation easements in Bonsall, Campo, Crest, Dehesa, Hamul, and Valley Center. The agenda on Wednesday also includes opening up bids for construction contracts on projects ranging from bridge maintenance in Descanso and Hacumba to drainage improvements in Alpine. And the agenda includes an item to move forward with a new baseball field in Ramona, as well as adoption of an ordinance that revises the county's food handler program. In addition, supervisors will vote Wednesday on adopting a feral pig management program and amending the county code regarding use of firearms in county parks to control non-invasive animals such as the wild pigs that cause significant damage to the environment. For full agendas, you can visit the county supervisor's website. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
You and your neighbors are invited to discuss access to safe, efficient, and affordable transportation options in East County. What are your transportation needs and priorities? How can you influence the transportation planning decisions? A community meeting on these issues is planned for Tuesday, September 9th from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at Prescott Promenade Park in downtown El Cajon. Dinner will be provided and Spanish translation is available. This event is organized by a coalition that includes the Environmental Health Coalition, Cleveland National Forest Foundation, the MAAC, and City Heights Community Development Corporation. The groups observe that transportation justice increases transportation access, improves public health and safety, and ensures equity for all. In addition, a petition has been launched calling on local elected officials and the San Diego Association of Governments to support transportation justice and adopt a regional transportation plan that, number one, builds public transit and biking or walking infrastructure projects first, postponing freeway expansion until a public transit network is fully operational. Two, develops transportation options that reduces vehicle miles traveled, also reducing air pollution and greenhouse gases that contribute to climate change. And three, increase safety for pedestrians through improved infrastructure for walking and bicycling, improves the frequency of transit and keeps prices affordable, and finally, prioritizes improving transit and biking and walking infrastructure in communities with the greatest need. To learn more ways that you can help, such as visiting public officials, collecting stories of local residents, and gathering petition signatures, visit the website transitsandiego.org. This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ.
A helicopter chartered by San Diego Gas and Electric Company to survey power lines in Descanso was flying below the legal height limit on Wednesday, numerous witnesses have told East County Magazine. The helicopter startled horses as well as residents, injuring a horse owned by owner Rita Gallant. Gallant told East County Magazine that a farrier, Tim Garland, who works for her, was out shoeing horses on her property and called to report that horses were being spooked by the low-flying chopper. Garland estimated that the chopper was just 150 to 200 feet above the gate, close enough to get a good look at the pilot, and well below the legal height limit of 1,000 feet, he told the property owner. "Your horses are going crazy," Gallant added. One horse that panicked and bolted was found with a gash on its side, which required suturing by a veterinarian. Gallant says SDG&E has agreed to reimburse her for the veterinary bill, but SDG&E has not responded to our request for comments on this story. Other Descanso residents also complained about the low-flying chopper. Gallant's neighbor, Robin, called her to ask what was going on at the property after seeing the unmarked golden-black helicopter flying back and forth repeatedly. Peggy Martin told East County Magazine that she also saw the helicopter and was worried it could be a Border Patrol or Sheriff's helicopter in pursuit of a suspect. "It was worrisome," said Martin, who adds that she called 911. "This was right over our property for about 20 minutes," she added. The 911 operator assured her that the helicopter did not belong to law enforcement and referred her to the FAA, who didn't know who owned the helicopter or why it was there. But after walking with a friend, Martin learned that a horse had been injured and that the helicopter belonged to SDG&E. She then called Todd Voorhees, SDG&E representative, to ask if the utility company would please provide notice to area residents in the future, since additional flights are planned as the company continues surveying lines and poles for possible replacement. Martin says Voorhees told her it would be difficult due to weather and other conditions. She added, "I told him I don't want to hear about difficult when there are injuries and people are afraid." Cindy Buxton, forest representative for the Sierra Club, also saw the helicopter flying low near her home. She has sent a letter to Cleveland National Forest Service officials, as well as to the California Public Utilities Commission, Supervisor Diane Jacob, and Congressman Duncan Hunter, asking that SDG&E be held accountable and that steps be taken to protect area residents and wildlife in the area. She also wants to see the power lines put underground, avoiding the need for future helicopter flights to check and maintain power lines in the forest. The CPUC has imposed fines and grounded SDG&E helicopters in the past, after an East County Magazine investigation proved that helicopters were violating no-fly zones around eagle nests. Another East County Magazine story caught SDG&E on video conducting an unauthorized flight and dropping a 16,000-pound section of a Sunrise Powerlink tower at a time when that helicopter was supposed to be grounded due to a prior incident of dropping a heavy load. That helicopter was later found to have a defect and was replaced following our investigation. So if you see a helicopter that you believe is flying too low, you are encouraged to take photos or video, send them to us at editor@eastcountymagazine.org, and contact the Federal Aviation Administration, as well as the California Public Utilities Commission in the case of a utility helicopter. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with today's Green Scene Report. Plastic accounts for 90% of all floating debris in our oceans. This has negatively impacted over 250 species and puts petroleum-based chemicals into our food chain. Many bags wind up in the Great Pacific Garbage Patch in the North Pacific Ocean that has been estimated to measure hundreds of thousands or even millions of square miles, larger than the state of Texas. Whales, dolphins, and sea turtles choke by swallowing plastic bags in the ocean, which resemble jellyfish that some of these animals eat. Bags can also become entangled around an animal's neck. To help solve these problems, the California legislature has voted 22-15 to ban plastic grocery bags, joining over 100 cities nationwide that have already banned the bags. The California measure, Senate Bill 270, is now awaiting Governor Jerry Brown's signature. East County's Assembly Representative split on the measure, with Republican Brian Jones voting against it and Democrat Shirley Weber voting in favor. The final bill is a compromise that addresses concerns over the impact on workers, said Senate Pro Tem-elect President Kevin De Leon of Los Angeles. Senator De Leon originally opposed the bill, but worked with industry and environmentalists to craft the solution. He calls the revised measure a win-win for the environment and for California workers. This legislation will implement a ban on single-use plastic grocery bags while promoting recycling and manufacturing. It also provides financial incentives to retrain California workers in the affected industries. Pete Grande, CEO of Command Packaging, says his company has already started diverting plastic from landfills and producing reusable bags in California. He adds, forward-thinking plastic bag manufacturers have the opportunity to grow jobs and manufacture environmentally sustainable products. Senate Bill 270 will ban non-recyclable plastic bags beginning in 2015 for grocery store carryouts. Stores will instead be required to use recycled paper, reusable plastic, and compostable bags, which can be sold for up to 10 cents apiece, or consumers can bring their own bags for shopping. Bags must contain 20% recyclable content by 2016 and 40% by 2020. Large chains will also be required to take back used bags for recycling, and third-party certification will be required to assure compliance. The measure applies to grocery retailers over 10,000 square feet with at least $2 million in annual sales and an in-store pharmacy. It also applies to convenience food stores and food marts. There are some exemptions, such as for bags used to hold prescriptions or to separate items in order to prevent contamination. The bill had support of a broad coalition including dozens of organizations, notably the California Retailers Association, Silicon Leadership Group, California Coastal Commission, Sierra Club California, and many cities and counties, including Los Angeles and San Francisco. It was opposed by a smaller group, including the Howard Jarvis Taxpayer Association and the American Forest and Paper Association. The city of Laguna Niguel also argued against the measure, stating this bill eliminates the ability of a local government to exercise its own discretion based on the unique needs and business climate of each city. Some opponents also objected to money for job retraining and to allow retailers to pass on costs of recycling to consumers by selling recyclable bags at a dime apiece. But for the majority in the legislature, this seemed a small price to pay for cleaning up our oceans, protecting marine wildlife, and our food supply.
This is East County Magazine's Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities.
This is Leon Thompson with today's Tribal Beat Report. Two agave roasting pits discovered recently in Hakumba Hot Springs have been carbon dated, indicating Kumeyaay Native American occupation in the Hakumba region dates back at least 9,000 years. Termed an outstanding recent archaeological find by the Imperial Valley Desert Museum in Akatia, the agave roasting pits were unearthed during construction of SDG&E's Eco Substation project at Hakumba Hot Springs in San Diego's East County. Howard Cook is chairman of Hakumba Hot Springs sponsor group, the town's advisory planning board. He believes the find should have impacts on future projects pending in the area. He told East County Magazine, "This is highly relevant to the proposed Hakumba solar project located next door and sharing roads with the under-construction Eco project. Certainly this calls for a cultural monitor and perhaps some preliminary excavating of the proposed site by the Historical Society and Native American historical cultural experts," Cook concluded. A new exhibit at the Imperial Desert Museum displays a vertical graph showing the dig site strata above a replica hearth. Yucca, juniper berry, cactus, and grass seeds were found in the ovens used by the ancient Kumeyaay people. The exhibit will travel to other museums for 9 months before being permanently installed at the Imperial Valley Desert Museum.
This coming Monday marks the 100th anniversary of the extinction of the passenger pigeon, and the commemoration is being used to urge protection of other species that may face the same fate and for the law that protects them. The Endangered Species Act was passed in 1973, but Jake Lee with Defenders of Wildlife says there needs to be a new commitment to keep it strong, as some in Congress are trying to dismantle key pieces of the act and eliminate or delay protections.
These are species that have actually warranted listing for over a decade, and yet there are proposals to delay that for, you know, another 5-10 years. And oftentimes it's to avoid the perceived inconvenience of protecting endangered species. There are other proposals to actually undermine the science that's used in endangered species decisions.
The passenger pigeon was once the most abundant bird in North America, numbering as many as 5 billion. But after decades of hunting and habitat destruction, the last one, named Martha, died at the Cincinnati Zoo on September 1st of 1914. Now, Lee says hundreds of other animals across the country could also disappear if the ESA is not protected.
There are about 1,500 species in the U.S. that are threatened or endangered with extinction. And about 95% of these species are threatened by habitat loss, many of the same factors that actually cause the passenger pigeon to go extinct.
In Texas, species that are imperiled include the lesser prairie chicken and the ocelot, which is also found in Central America.
And that is something really unique to the U.S., that there aren't too many species that are found in Central America and in certain portions of the U.S. And this U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, using the Endangered Species Act, is trying to help recover and conserve ocelots in southern Texas.
According to Defenders of Wildlife, the Endangered Species Act has proven an incredible success over the past 40 years, protecting over 2,000 foreign and domestic species from extinction. For Public News Service, I'm John Michelson.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. And today we thought we would share with you some of our best-kept secrets about East County during autumn, some fun things to do in fall. Now, I've got with me two of our hardworking staffers, Ed Barena and Leon Thompson. Guys, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Now, there's a lot of major festivals going on this time of year. One of them is the Julian Apple Festival. Have you guys been up there, Ed? You've got a little boy.
I've never been up to Julian for the Apple Festival. We go up there sometimes when it snows.
Okay. Well, sometimes you can actually catch both at the same time if there's an early snowfall. Apple days, you can go up there and you can pick the apples. You can taste those world-famous apple pies, apple cider, apple, just about everything up there.
And I've been going to the Apple Fest for years, and now in Julian, they're growing more grapes than apples these days. And there's a number of distinguished wineries up in Julian. And that's one of my favorite things is, of course, as you know, tasting wine.
It's not just tasting wine, even for people that aren't wine drinkers. This is the fall harvest season at the wineries, and so it's really fascinating to take some of the wine tours and learn the winemaking process and how they crush the grapes. And if you really want to experience it firsthand, some of the wineries locally, like Orfila and the town, entire town of Julian, hold grape stomps so you can bare your feet and dive into that vat of grapes and stomp away.
Well, if you're serious about wine and you have a favorite winery, they're always looking for help around the time that they do the harvest. And the reason for that is, for instance, when your grapes have to be so ripe, they're ready to fall off the vine.
Mm-hmm.
So you've really got a short window. The optimum time to harvest the grapes are around this time of the year.
That's true. Some of them do picking parties where you can go out and volunteer and help harvest the grapes. Now, there's also Oktoberfest. There's one in La Mesa and one in El Cajon. Now, what can you guys tell our listeners about those?
Yeah, I've been to the La Mesa one a few times, and it's always a great family fun. Tons of people out, you know, vendors. You can get your hands on a October brew.
Right. It says our brew beat columnist here, Ed.
Yes. And, the October variety of brews are pretty cool with the pumpkin ales and things like that. So, it's a great time to get out and, you know, try a couple of new flavors of beer and, also, you know, spend time with your family out playing some games.
Dance a polka.
Yeah.
That's right. They have those Oompa-Pa bands. Some of these festivals bring them all the way in from Germany, I understand. And the El Cajon one, La Mesa's is the bigger Oktoberfest. It's kind of big and rowdy and a lot going on there. They have a huge, you know, beer garden, but there's also things for kids and families. But the El Cajon one positions itself as authentic, and it is sponsored by the German-American Society of San Diego. And you can actually get Bavarian pastries, and they roast a whole ox on a spit out there each year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Get your share of Lederhosen.
Hey, there you go. You do. That's not the only festival. There's always in late November, it's an annual tradition in East County to have the Mother Goose Parade. And it's actually the largest of its kind.
It's just kind of a tradition in San Diego, because it's the first time I ever saw the Mother Goose Parade. I was just a kid. I mean, seriously, I was knee-high to a grasshopper.
Yeah, me too.
And it just kind of wouldn't be the same if you didn't have that Mother Goose Parade every year.
Yeah, they have floats for representing all of the fairy tales, marching bands, equestrian. And sometimes they have celebrities, and it's always tradition for the little ones that they end up the parade each year with Santa Claus heralding in the holiday season as well.
When I think autumn, I think of the powwow season. Of course, I'm Native American from northern Minnesota.
Oh, yes.
Chippewa tribe. And
it's in your blood.
I'll throw that in there. A prestigious tribe. The thing about the powwows, besides Indian culture and art and music, the families get together, and that's the time of year when there's courting and people get to know each other and renewing old family friendships.
There are also dancers from tribes across the nation who come here to compete for actually cash prizes at these. So you can see the really elaborate regalia, they call it, or costuming.
The fancy dancers.
Fancy dancers, jingle dancers. There's a whole different variety of them. Very elaborate, very intricate. Quite an impressive thing. And if you're going, they usually start it with a grand procession. So if you look up when that is on the schedule, that's where people from every tribe will come in, and you'll see all the different regalia. And there are also crafters around, so you can buy Native American crafts, everything from Indian blankets to Indian jewelry, carved gourds, a lot of Native American craft work, and foods, Indian tacos.
And music, right? There's lots of really cool Indian music that I've heard.
Yes. And we have all that on our calendar for all the events we've mentioned today, by the way. Now, Ed, you're a football fan. What about sports out here in the fall?
Yeah, there's lots of football. You know, San Diego has some of the best high school players in the country, so it's a good time to kind of go out, check out the football games, and catch some of the athletes before they become big stars.
There you go, and there's Aztec Sports, too, at STSU.
What about for the kids, you can go out to the pumpkin patch.
Let the
kids run around and play a bunch of games. They usually have those inflatable slides and things like that now. It's really fun for kids. I take my kid every year.
Some of them have petting zoos. There's one called Oma's Pumpkin Patch out in Lakeside, for example, that has all of that. Some of them do corn mazes, so you can run and get lost in the maze, let the kids have, run wild and have fun. And one of my favorites, it's a little bit more to drive, but up in Valley Center, they have Bates Nut Farm, which is really, I think, world famous now. They, among other things, grow some of the largest pumpkins any place. So if you want to impress the neighbors or the kids and haul home a 100-pound pumpkin or so from the patch, you can do that. They do a craft fair and harvest festival every year that goes on during pumpkin season. They'll roast corn on the barbecue. They have a climbing wall for the kids that you can literally tell them to go climb the wall.
Yeah, I've been to the Alma's one, and that one's really nice. It's always a lot of people there, and the kids are just having a blast.
Yeah, that sounds great. There's also, if you get out into the small towns country, a lot of those have craft fairs, fall festivals, or harvest festivals. Again, we list those on our calendar at eastcountymagazine.org, and this is really a little bit of Americana. Where else can you go out and buy a homemade quilt or these wonderful crafts? Some of these are kind of disappearing arts, but you can still find it in the small towns of East County.
Very cool.
Another thing is fall foliage. A lot of people think you've got to go all the way to New England to see it, but you don't. I did a story a couple of years ago on Black Friday and kind of being the rebel. I refused to go to the malls. I guess that's another fall tradition for some folks, but I wrote mine and called it a Friday. It was anything but black. And I went out into the back country. I also did some wine tasting. But a lot of people don't realize that at the wineries, the leaves will change to gold and they'll change to red against our beautiful purple mountains. There's places where you can see the trees turning the golden oaks. There's some that turn red, some liquid amber trees, which aren't native, but they're still beautiful. The big sycamores and aspen and all kinds of beautiful, beautiful trees. One of my favorite routes for leaf watching is Highway 79 on the road to Warner Springs. And the later you go, the better. I went over Thanksgiving weekend and it was gorgeous. Another great place is there's a little road behind the Pine Hills Lodge in Julian. If you go deep into the woods, there's places where you just get the canopy of just orange trees, kind of like you'd see in New England. And yet another hidden secret is if you take the road down past Cottonwood Golf Course, there's a river along there, and you get a lot of really beautiful trees turning color this time of year as you get into September, October, and November.
Yeah, it's beautiful by the golf course.
Yeah, East County has a lot of beautiful country that people don't really realize. When you get out there hiking, you really sort of appreciate how beautiful our area is.
Well, that's true. And hiking in the fall is also a wonderful thing. When you wait and the air is beginning to get a little bit crisp and cool and you've got those gorgeous colors turning, there's just nothing more wonderful, I think, than autumn in East County.
Well, one thing good about autumn in East County is it's a little cooler. And I like to hike. And when it's 110 degrees out, hiking is a little unpleasant. But in the fall, you can take those high desert hikes that you want to take.
Yeah, and it also kicks off the desert season as well, so people go out on their motorcycles and their sand rails and all that, go out to the desert, the Far East there, and have a lot of fun with their families riding around on
dune
their
buggies.
Machines.
Well, I want to thank both of you for joining us and sharing some of your experiences and insights across East County, and I hope all of you will have a wonderful autumn season in East County. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Brian Boykel, Kevin McLeod, Jim Hannibal, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.